White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 564.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with AwarioGoldArena.com and by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family, and we know you and we love you. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, how you doing tonight?
I'm good, and I'd like to welcome everyone to part one of our four-part Akron preview episode, which will be longer than the actual game itself.
And far more entertaining, probably.
Well, that was a given.
That was a given, right. Yeah, so it is no longer Zero Week, which sounds like something that DC would do involving the Legion of Superheroes. It is now Week 1, and we are preparing for actual honest-to-goodness tackle football in the SEC.
Amen.
And I know that last season kind of counted, but it kind of honestly to me didn't. So it feels like the first time we've had real football coming in 2 years in some ways.
It does.
So
that's exciting.
It is. It really is. And our first opponent will be the Zips from what I keep calling Archon. Archon is actually either a science fiction convention in St. Louis that I go to every year, or this Thor Conan looking guy the Avengers fought a few years ago. This is Akron, which doesn't sound near as good as Archon. They need to just go in and change the name of the town immediately. But then again, I can't imagine Terry Bowden ever coaching something called Archon.
Way too cool for him.
Nah, way too cool. So I wonder if they set this game up when Terry was the coach, like, you know, thinking I'm going to go down and get to coach in Jordan-Hare Stadium again. Do we know anything about that?
I don't know that. I don't know how long ago the game was. I suspect it was probably when he was coach, because that was just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that was part of the thing or not. I think that was just a paycheck game for them, and we needed a team.
Yeah. Yeah, I just wonder, because, you know, they tried to do the thing with Florida State when he was here, and then that didn't work out. And then if this was a plan as well, it didn't work out either. Every time we try to do something clever involving Terry Bowden, he goes and gets fired. So we never get to actually do it. So what do we talk? I guess tonight we're going to start out by looking at I'm going to say it again.
Archon.
At Archon. It's going to be awesome, man. There's going to be all kind of panels. Going to be celebrity guests. I have a table there. It'd be great. We can just spend the whole hour talking about Archon. Probably be a lot more interesting than talking about Akron, to be honest.
Probably put up a lot more resistance than
yeah.
Will.
Oh man, them nerds would fight, John. Them geeks, man. They'll fight. They dress up like Ghostbusters and stuff. They'll fight back. But no, Akron. I mean, the impression I get is that they won two games last year and they were very excited to have turned the corner. That's not a good sign when you're like two wins. Yes, now we're on the way.
Yeah. Yeah, they are not just bad, they're incredibly bad.
In the MAC.
They're amazingly bad. Again, Terry Bowden was fired. The 2019, the year he was fired, they were one of the worst FBS teams. So, like, out of 130, they were, like, whatever, 129th or so. And then, you know, in last year, they weren't much better. Yeah. Under new coach Tom Arth. Also sounds like a fictional character.
Arth from Archon. I'm sure that was that appeared in Isaac Asimov's science fiction magazine in the 50s.
It did.
The saga of Arth from Archon.
They are not good. Out of every team in college football, they allowed the most yards on a yard per play basis last year.
Wow.
And everybody other than Scott Luffler's Bowling Green team averaged 49 yard points against them and 8 yards a play.
Oh, my gosh. So we shouldn't take a lot of we shouldn't look at our results against them on Saturday and go, oh, we've solved everything.
Yes.
We're a machine, because everybody is a machine against them, in other words.
That's fair. That's a true statement. So I think you have to we want to look good, and we want to move the ball, and we want to show new things, but don't take rolling up and down the field on them is a sign of things to come. Well, I would say don't take not rolling up and down the field on them as a gigantic problem, but maybe it would be.
I think
we ought to build this lineup and hand the ball off and blow them out of the stadium. But
I hope that we give Tank and company some opportunities early on, and then they see the early showers. We need to save our best weapons for when they're needed the most, and they're not going to be needed theoretically in this game.
No. I mean, I think we need to play Bo maybe longer than we would, just because the new offense, we want him to get reps and stuff. Mm. But I agree, like whenever we're up 21 in the beginning of the second quarter or whatever, like Tank and
we hope.
Yeah, I'm not going to wood when I say that, but like Tank and Roger McCreary and the two starting linebackers could come out at that point. So
what quarter does Finley go in?
Halftime.
Maybe into the third.
Maybe.
I'm going to say midway through the third quarter. Now, that's probably influenced by the fact that Gus would go excruciatingly long before he would take out his quarterback and put in the backup.
And again, they need him to get snaps, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they also, you're correct, they need Finley to get some snaps so they feel confident in putting him in a game.
Absolutely. Well, here is what I understand about Akron. I'll just throw out a few facrontoids. My understanding is their defense is not great. Their kicking game is all right. But their offense is like abysmally bad. But they actually did fairly well in two games last year because they brought in this transfer running back who was like the best part of their offense. But he may or may not be playing this season because he got into trouble with the law. I guess he's one of those guys that couldn't get on at a bigger program because he's had some issues, personal issues. Mm. So he got on at Akron, and now he's gotten in trouble with the law again. If he plays for them, they might actually put up a little bit of a fight for 5 minutes. But if he doesn't play, I don't think they're going to cross the 50-yard line.
Teon Dollard is the guy's name you're talking about.
Yes.
That
is the guy.
As of 6 hours ago, he is suspended and no longer listed on the Zips roster.
Wow. Well, there we go.
Breaking news.
Dollard is suspended.
And that was by far their best offensive weapon.
Oh, yeah. So I'm not sweating this game a whole lot. I'm thinking seriously, I should go ahead and just shift all. Oh, I don't have it.
It's not hate week next week.
No, it's not. Oh, never mind. Yeah. Anyway, but should I get a jump
hating early
on the hatred and just go ahead and shift my attention?
Georgia State Hate Week 2021.
I feel like I need to throw one more sound effect in there. It's like it's almost there.
It really is, man. It's very close.
It just needs one
right there.
We got an explosion. We got Howard Dean. We got a woman screaming. We got the bells tolling. I need one more.
Here's the problem. Like, that's game four. That's post Penn State.
State
next week.
I forgot.
You can't. It's a little early to leap ahead to week four hate. So
well, I think
you got to keep that one in your pocket.
I will. It's never too early to start hating Georgia State irrationally and randomly, though.
I hear you.
I mean, if we don't beat UGA this year, and who knows, right? We could. But if we don't beat UGA this year, at least we're going to get a win, hopefully, over a team with Georgia in the name. Though I take nothing for granted because they are formidable, or I wouldn't hate them. These people live in the former Olympic Village.
That.
Yeah. They got athletics just rubbing off on them from their dorm rooms in the Olympic Village there. where the elevators
and the former Braves Stadium too.
Yeah, because the where the elevators didn't even quit working because they settled. They built them so poorly, the buildings settled right after the Olympics, and the elevators quit working. Oh God! Those were tall buildings too. You imagine being on like the 9th or 10th floor and the elevators don't work. Oh my gosh. Man, Georgia State, ladies and gentlemen. All right, so did you find out where the name Zips comes from? Did I get a sense of that?
I did, and you're going to like this.
Okay.
The name Zips comes from the zipper rubber overshoes made by the B.F. Goodrich Company of Akron that were popular in the 1920s and 30s. In 1925, a campus-wide contest conducted to choose a nickname for the university's athletic teams. Suggestions submitted by students, faculty, and alumni included the Golden Blue Devils, the Tip Toppers, the Rubbernecks, the Hillbillies, the Kangaroos, and the Chevaliers. The winner, freshman Margaret Hamilton, received a $10 pair of zippers.
Wow.
It was officially shortened to Zips in 1950.
They were the zippers?
Yes, they were the zippers.
Oh my gosh, that's even better. The Akron Zippers.
That's it. So we should call them the Zippers on Saturday.
Wow.
The university mascot is Zippy, a female kangaroo, and is one of only 8 female college mascots in the United States.
Wow. There's just so much there, I don't even know where to begin. I had no idea. So I thought their mascot would be like a giant zipper.
It's clearly it's like a pair of rubber galoshes or shoes, right? So it could be that. It could be a big rubber
shoe. A big shoe. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God. I just don't even...
It should be like a pair of duck boots or something.
Well, all right. Number one, of the names you listed, I got to admit, Zips is probably the best one, which is a sad...
Chevalier?
I guess. Look, if you're creating, Goodyear or Goodrich?
Yeah, Goodyear.
Goodyear? I mean, A, racers, but don't tread on me, huh? But... I'm thinking the shoes would be the last thing I think of with Goodyear.
They could have made some kind of tire thing, the radials or the white walls.
Oh, the white walls. The white walls. Heck yeah. That's awesome. It's like somehow racist and yet not, you know? I don't know. They get in trouble now for that for no reason. Oh, that's so good. Again, we could do a whole show now just on the name Zips because there's just so much to that. If you're basing it all on Goodyear, there's so many better things that you could do. And that's what I was going to say is Chevalier or whatever. Just be Chevy Cavaliers. You're putting tires on them anyway. Be the Chevy Cavaliers. Why not?
I like it.
Oh, God. That's great. Well, seriously, though, about Akron, man, I could just go on for the rest of the show. I do know that I mentioned their offense. They had that one good player, the running back. Otherwise, they got nothing, so they're in deep trouble. But their defense, from what I understand that the word on the street is that they've been trying to run a more sophisticated defense. They don't really have the personnel for it. So it's not that they're unsound or their coaches are inept, except in the sense of their coaches are not, they're not doing what suits the personnel. They're doing what they want to do and trying to get the personnel to fit it. And we know that that doesn't always work out too well.
That's right. They're aggressive on defense. They like to blitz a lot, send a lot of guys from different angles and stuff. It doesn't always work out because they don't have the guys that could cover. And their run defense isn't good. The other gaps are very good, and their guys can't stand up. So a lot of teams just run the ball straight at them, and it doesn't matter. They're blitzing. So, but I expect to see some of that, and if some of that makes Auburn adjust and makes Bo Nix adjust and have to do the check down or that kind of thing, I would be interested to see that in this game.
Well, one thing we know is that if the regime last year was still in place, we would probably be able to run on them pretty well. But we would spend most of the first quarter trying to pass, and there would be dudes in Bo Nix's face every play, and we might even throw a pick six before the end of the first quarter. And then some way in the second quarter, we would just go to the run and beat them like 38-10 or something.
Yes.
But I feel like Well, we don't know yet. I haven't watched a lot of Boise game film from the last couple of years, so I'm not really sure. And, of course, that was without Bobo. So I'm really kind of – I don't think anybody knows what our offense is going to be like because this combination's never been together before in the coaching staff and with these players.
Right. And I think unlike what we have experienced for the last 10 years, you know, Harsin and Bobo both aren't like system guys, right? They have a basic style, you know, but they are use what players they have to their best effect and adapt the plays and the offense to that. You know what I'm saying? So if they got guys that could do, if they got better receivers and more of them, they'll go to more four wideout stuff, right? And if they have better tight ends and more of those, they'll go to more kind of one and two tight end set stuff, which I think you're going to see more of this year.
So, absolutely. We're going to see a lot of tight end, double tight end sets. A lot of ace. I feel like we're going to see a lot of that ace formation where you got the one good back, two tight ends, one on each side, and two receivers. Because that gives you a lot of blocking, gives you a lot of protection for the quarterback. I don't know they're going to use a lot of fullback anyway. And it limits how many receivers you got out there on the field in a given time, and you can, you know, you can flex out eat one or both of the tight ends to give you an extra up to four receivers if you wanted to. So, I like that formation a lot. I mean, I remember the, you know, the team that used to use that all the time that was interesting to me was in the old World League, the New York New Jersey Knights. They ran that, and I think the Birmingham Fire in that league did too. They'd run a lot of that ace formation. It was very interesting because it's the first time I remember watching pro football, quote unquote, where where they had a lot of single back. You know, what was in vogue back then was the two back split backfield, like the 49ers, you know, the West Coast offense and all that. Maybe some I still lingering around in those days, but not a lot of single back with two tight ends. So. Now, the run and shoot would use the single back and the two wide out, but they put two slot receivers instead of two tight ends. Right. I'm saying you can kind of do the same thing with two tight ends. You could do with two slot receivers. So, you know, just kind of the same thing. So, better blockers. Yeah. You're not creating running space by having the this that gets you to the Spurrier thing. Well, this is fun. I'm enjoying this, actually. I know you're probably bored to death, but Spurrier's thing was to use things like that and have the receivers going at patterns to open space. Whereas you have the tight ends, they can actually just block a space for you. They're physically opening a gap. So it's just a different approach to achieving basically the same thing, right?
And Gus would have the receivers out there and have them stay in close to the tackles and block.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which accomplished neither. Drove me bananas.
Well, see, that was the thing is in 13, 14, we had receivers that could do that.
Yeah. Well, but we also had other players that could block, and we didn't count on them. To line up right next to the tackles and do that.
That's right. Yeah, you take away the advantage of spreading out the field without actually getting anything in return, more or less. So
that's right.
Well, let's see. We talked about Terry. He's down in Louisiana now, right? He's been pitched off of the Zipper.
La Monroe. We'll come back to him in a few minutes.
And, it's the other one that became Louisiana, right? It's the Cajuns that are like Louisiana.
Lafayette, yes.
They're not Lafayette anymore.
They're just Louisiana.
Louisiana. It was a thing that LSU fought against for 100 years, and they finally lost, but oh well. What about Auburn? What are we hoping to see offense and defense in this game? And I'll just say, some of it's obvious. We want Bo to look like he knows what he's doing. We want good production early from Tank and then let him go sit. I think we really the two positions we talked about all year have been seeing the offensive line and the receivers look like they have some clue. I have a few thoughts about that, but go ahead and what do you think about?
No, but I think we want to see some coherence from the offense too, right? We want to see different things, different pass patterns, different play calls, different formations and stuff that we have run the past few years, and we want to see it executed. We want to see them look like they know what they're doing. And that they have answers when the other team shows something, they're like, okay, you're doing this, we're going here. Instead of, you're doing this, it doesn't matter, we call the play and you're, you know, executing it, which we saw, you know. So that's what I want to see. And then defense, we have, you know, I want to see, can we get some pass rush? That's one thing I'm looking for. And then the big thing you said at the very beginning is just no injuries, get everybody out of the game as quickly as possible.
Oh, just think about this though, John. There may come a point in this game where we get a first down and we don't rush up to the line and run up the middle for no gain. I mean, I was going to say, the last time we did that was probably 2012, but we ran up the middle for no gain every play in 2012. So you got to go back to like, you got to go back to 10 or 11 maybe. And even then you still had the same offensive coordinator. You might have to go all the way back to 2008. So yeah, it's been a long time.
It's been a
long
time.
Yeah. It's been 2008 since Gus Malzahn was not either our offensive coordinator or our head coach and basically offensive coordinator, with the exception of Loeffler in 12.
Yeah, and that was an absolute dumpster fire. And and he was still trying to call some of the Gus plays in that season, wasn't that?
A little bit. Here's the thing about our offense that I'm curious about. I think this is the thing that's going to hold us back the most, at least for the first half of this year on offense. And that is that the two positions on offense that are having to change the way they approach the game the most, I think, are the offensive linemen and the receivers. Because the receivers obviously are playing a whole different sport, basically, now.
Yes.
I keep wondering what the Central Florida receivers are thinking when they got the new playbook. I just keep thinking they're like, seriously? This is it? This is what we're going to be doing? Seriously? Okay. But I mean, the receivers are going to have to be playing a whole different thing than they've ever done before, because they've got to like all know the different patterns and make reads at the line before the snap and all that, and then get open, which is kind of a novel concept for our receivers lately. The offensive linemen don't have a pre-programmed, they're not just robots anymore. They've got to read the defense before the snap and make individual assignments too in this offense. So the good news is our receivers and our offensive linemen are going to be expected to do a whole lot more. The bad news is they're the two weakest positions on this offense that you're expecting to suddenly do the most complicated thing in some ways.
That's fair. I mean, again, I think the quarterbacks are in that same thing. They're having to read things that they didn't read before. They were not the person doing some reading, and I think they and the receivers have to read the defensive backs together to say, like, okay, this is which way this person has leverage and that kind of thing on the receiver. So that's fair. I think the receivers is the most different, probably.
Yeah.
It really is a learning curve for them. And I'm interested to see how they play. I'm interested to see who plays and who makes plays, right?
Well, when the new guy comes in and is instantly by far the best receiver, that tells you that he actually has a background in being coached this way. And he's able to just jump right in and have an understanding of what you're supposed to do as a receiver in this kind of offense, whereas the ones that have been here all this time have never had to do anything like this, and they're kind of starting from scratch.
It's fair, but I think they're going to be okay. I think they're going to make some plays, the returning guys.
It just sucks that the two positions that are having to learn all this stuff are kind of our problem positions anyway. And we're just, sure. I mean, if the offensive linemen and the receivers were being asked to do the same thing this year that they did the last couple of years, they would still struggle. But now they're really going to struggle.
I mean, again, I think it's a chicken or egg question, right? Mm. I think one of the reasons the receivers struggled is because of what they were asked to do, right? I think they didn't get to play football the same way that the receivers at Alabama or LSU did, where they could look at the defense and say, you're going to do this, I'm going to therefore do this. They were like, I have to do this no matter what you're doing. And if you know the play, you're going to be in the spot where I'm trying to go, waiting on me. So I think that's a fundamental difference of how they operate. And you're right, it is different, and it requires them to act differently. But, I mean, I think they can handle it. I think, again, it's been the off season, it's been spring and the summer and the fall. I think they're going to be okay, and I think it is going to be different. And one thing for both of those groups in these first two games, they're going to be mistakes, and we have to not freak out and not, you know, say it's in a civilization when somebody does the wrong thing or somebody makes a mistake, because it's going to happen. I mean, everybody on offense and some players on defense are going to make mistakes these first two games, but I, for one, am thankful that we have two bad teams to work it out against before we play good teams. We would be in real trouble starting with a quality team.
Oh, no doubt about it. Well, that's one of the reasons I'm so concerned about the Penn State game. I'm not sure that in two games, and that was your next question you had raised, was how should Auburn use these first two games? I'm not convinced that we're going to be able to accomplish enough in these two games to get us where we need to be against an improving, theoretically better, much better Penn State team.
That's fair. But again, I'm glad we're not paying a quality opponent, SEC or otherwise.
No, absolutely.
We need it. We need the time. And I think they go out and execute. That's why I think if it was Gus and this was the same schedule, you would say Gus would hide everything and run something that isn't our offense in the first two games and reveal the good stuff in the Penn State game. I don't think they're going to do that.
No.
But I think they're going to keep one or two things in the bag, but I think they're going to go out and run the offense because they got to figure out who can run the offense and who can do the jobs they're supposed to do in the offense we're trying to run.
Yeah.
And then they got to go have tape of them doing it or not doing it to show and say, hey, this is what you did wrong. You got to clean that up.
Well, where's the game even going to be? My wife was actually asking this because I'll be at Dragon Con. I'm going to be relying on Jared or somebody to find a way for us to see the game. But I guess it's like up in the 600s on DirecTV or something, or do I have to have a login?
SEC Network Plus. So there are multiple SEC games on at night. We are not on SEC Network. So it is like the SEC Network alternative, basically plus. My first suggestion is if you have access to like the ESPN app or whatever with games on it, I think you could probably find it on there. If not, you're right. It's going to be one of those way up channel number. So
yeah, I'm that Saturday night I'll be doing either Marvel DC Jeopardy or Sci-Fi Lit Jeopardy, so I won't even have time to look at my phone to see what's going on. So it'll all be a great surprise to me when we roll in somewhere at like 8:30 and find it on the TV, and I'll be like, oh, look at that, it's 0-0 in the third quarter. Hit the panic button, John. Hit the panic button. Ooga, ooga. Yeah, so no, hopefully it will not be that. But I'm looking forward to seeing where – it's always a challenge every year at Dragon Con to figure out where I'm going to watch any of the first Auburn game. And it's like there used to be a Durango – we were talking about this on Facebook the other day, some Auburn people – I mean the Dragon Con people – that there used to be this great Durango right across Peachtree from the Hyatt. And I would just slide right over there as soon as my last thing was done and sit at the bar and get me a burger or a steak or something and watch the game. TV right there. But that's gone. So it gets trickier to find good food downtown Atlanta, believe it or not. It's not as easy as it used to be. Everything's kind of, except for the food court. Who wants that? So, kind of tricky. But we'll see. We'll see. Have to find some place serves chicken fingers or pizza rolls from here, I guess. It's going to be an interesting trip. Let's see. So you had a question here about concerns. Why don't you take that one?
I was just going to say we talked through this some in our game preview stuff, but what worries or concerns you the most heading into the season? And I was kind of thinking about this as a follow-up to our episode last week, but what do you think is the limiting factor right now on how good this team can be? Is it quarterback, offensive line, receivers, or like defensive line?
Well, I mean, my knee-jerk reaction is to say offensive line, but I do think this offensive line can run block to a degree. I think that they'll be able to generate some yards on the ground against almost anybody. But you got to keep them honest. You got to be able to throw the ball a little bit. And I don't know. I mean, it's going to be a challenge. I guess the passing game is what concerns me.
I hear you. I think I'm the same. I think, can the receivers get separation? Can they make plays with the ball in their hand? Can they, get open and can they find space and get open? And then, Bo Nix stalled last year. Can he get better? Can he improve?
Mm-hmm.
Can he show improvement? And can the offensive line pass block to allow them to execute those things?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So I think that's it. That's the question. That's the limiting factor. If we can do that even a little bit, you're right, then we'll be fine. I mean, we won't be great, but we'll be fine. If we could do that well, look out. So
I feel like one thing that I have a little more confidence in this staff doing is finding more and more creative ways to keep Nick safe a little bit longer. Because I feel like under Gus's offense, when the offensive line wasn't really good, they didn't really have much of an answer for what does he do. It was just he runs for his life. So, and by the way, one criticism of Finley, I've heard that, you know, in a lot of ways he's playing pretty much equally well to Bo, but one criticism I've heard is he's not as mobile as Bo.
No, he's a much, much slower guy. He's right. A much bigger, taller, heavier guy, but he's a lot slower.
And so the one thing Bo can do is keep the play alive by running for his life, as we've seen the last 2 years. So when you say what concerns you the most heading into the season, quarterback, offensive line, receivers, defensive line, my answer is yes.
It was more of a pick one.
I kind of figured that. Yeah. I'm not as concerned about the defensive line just because I think that you can cover up their deficiencies with everything else that we have on the defense better. I did see though that Anders Carlson is closing in on passing Cadillac for points. Kickers always get to do that though. You know, they get a point every time. You know, they either get three or one basically almost every time you score. So they're always getting those bonus points. But that's pretty cool that he's only played. This is only his third year, isn't it? I think this is his third year. Yeah. Yeah. And I think he's probably gone after this year. So this is going to be it. He's never going to
I think academically he's a senior. Or whatever,
yeah. So. Yeah, because he didn't play his freshman year. He's behind his brother. So this may be his fourth year on the team. He's never going to catch his brother. His brother played 4 years and was a machine. So, but he's going to be up there. He's going to be like in the top few. Five or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing.
He's a very, very good kicker. We're lucky to have him.
Absolutely. Okay.
One more football note before we jump on to other topics real quick. There was a depth chart released today.
Okay.
Nothing dramatic, incredibly exciting. I would say nothing that was like, ooh, look at that. The only two things I thought were interesting were the backup slot receiver was this freshman, Tarvarish Dawson.
Okay.
We've heard a lot about. He's the only freshman in the two deep.
Wow.
And the backup nose tackle is J.J. Pegues.
Yeah. Up to number two is Pegues. Awesome.
Yes.
Look at him. All right. Well, in a way, that's good for him, and in a way, it's bad because you don't need the new guy being your number two. I assume that Fair is number one.
Yeah, he is. Okay. Tony Fair is number one. But I think a lot, we're going to be in nickel, and we're going to be in a pass rush kind of thing, and then neither one of them will be on the field. So.
Yeah, it's probably so. Yeah. Just real quick, so the big thing coming up this week is Dragon Con for me, certainly, and Mira. We're going to be flying down to Atlanta on Thursday, and that is significant for this program in that I'll have quite a few copies with me, and Jared will too, of We Believed, and so you can come by, get it signed, pick up a copy if you don't have one, and talk a little bit, just hang out some. I will be at my table on and off. My schedule will be erratic. I'll probably post it at my table so people come up and they wonder where I am. They'll see when I'll be back. But I've got panels in like many different tracks throughout Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. But I'm pretty much planning on either being at my table or at a panel the whole weekend. And when I'm at my table, I'll have my books, including Miami Heist, Vegas Heist, plus We Believed and a couple others. But also, on Sunday at 5:30 in the Kennesaw Room of the Hyatt Regency, I'm having my annual reading panel where I hold court for an hour and I read a little bit out loud. I kind of perform a little bit from several different works. One of them will be We Believed. I've got a section picked out from that that'll be good that I'm going to read. And I'm going to do a little bit from Validus V, which is my like sort of Shogun Warriors Godzilla novel I'm working on. I'll do a little bit from Miami Heist, which is like a 1960s crime novel. And I'll do a little bit from Solanus, which is like my new kind of Doctor Who-ish meets Rick and Morty story book that I'm working on next. So come on down to the Hyatt, 5:30 on Sunday if you're part of the con. And it'll be fun. I'll have books with me there. I'll be signing them, selling them. I'll hook you right up right there in the room. So otherwise, We, and by the way, that means that I won't be back until late Monday, so we're probably going to, and then you, John, you're doing something as well, and so we're going to do like a little quick game summary update analysis thing to tide you over on Monday, and then we'll be back for our full show a little bit later in the week. So expect a slightly delayed show next week just because of logistics from us kind of being traveling around. But then after that, we will settle into our usual rhythm and our usual routine throughout the season. We have to thank, yes, we do not do ads on this program other than our own, as I just did. So we have to thank the fine folks who keep our program going. For as little as a dollar a month, you can join their ranks, be part of the AU Wishbone family, and have your name called and thanked, or whatever phrase or name you want to put in there, because, man, do we get some interesting ones now, as you're about to see, or about to hear. So go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com, and click on the big orange button to become a patron. Join the fun, and we do various things throughout the year. I guess, you know, next spring we'll have the March Madness brackets that we do, and we're currently doing the Formula One Fantasy League, and I've been releasing some bonus podcasts to the patrons lately. I released our Raiders of the Lost Ark 40th anniversary review. That was a whole lot of fun. And I released a Ocean's 11 review. And we've done quite a few things like that. We've got a Fellowship of the Ring 20th anniversary review coming up that I'll be releasing. And we did a Marvel MCU television review of Loki and WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier. So you're getting a whole lot of bonus material lately on the old Patreon. And here are the folks that have joined up so far. They include Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Jeremiah Schumann, and Patrick Hayes, and Samuel Salvatore. You guys are awesome, and ladies, and all you folks. I believe those are all guys. Allison Rich, Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, J.J.P. Geese. Thanks a lot for that phonetic spelling. Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden. He's a dark horse for the Heisman. Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, Eric Morgan, Bobby, I Need Amanda Hug and Kiss. Yep. That's one of them. George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, There Goes Davis, WDE Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, who's currently behind me, Brandon Smith. Oh, I forgot. Yeah, we had to reshuffle that. Let me do it over again. Boris the Tiger, Brandon the Smith, Cato the Barner, and Chris the Hilton. Brandon, we got to get you on the bandwagon now since you've kind of popped in between Boris and Cato. Colby Butler, Danny Flack, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Die Bama, Earl Ricks. No, seriously, Die Bama, Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan. By the way, that reminds me, I've mailed out quite a few of the posters the last couple of weeks, too. We did a nice business of those Auburn posters that I had printed up based on the covers of We Believe. So I'll have some of those at Dragon Con at my table, too. If you want to pick up these really nice posters of the of basically the last 40 years of Auburn football. Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley, Owlgorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog. This is the year Bo Nix has improved so much under this new offense. He's focused. He's having fun. I wouldn't be surprised if Tim Pittman, Tony Perry. We taught Van how to say Pegues. That's a new one. Thanks, Steven. Alex Nguyen, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Regis, Bill Miner, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Colonel Dad, Daniel Barnett, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, Elizabeth Donald, Ice Cream Clone. And finally, James Taylor, Jason, the Weasel Skull Albrecht. I'll be seeing Jason in just a couple of days. That's Jared's brother. John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, I'll be seeing Kathy in just a couple of days, Kenneth Brent Rains, Mark Squire, Michael Halbrook, Mick Vigicon, I think I'll be seeing Auburn Elvis as well, he usually pops up, Mustangs Smoke Camaros Every Day, oh, okay, all right, Paul Bankson, Public Land Owner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Why Am I Even Here, John Ringer Has All the Talent and Carries This Show. John is dying right now. He's muted. Brent Rumble, Chris, plus our one-time anonymous and smart aleck donors.
I just want to say, I salute you.
www.auwishbone.com. That popped up first when I did the Babylon 5 show with Andy the other night, and I read it, and then I just stopped in my tracks, and I said, why am I even here? Andy Fix has all the talent and carries this show too. So I made it apply for both shows. Yes.
Nice.
You're welcome. All right. That's our patrons. Now it is time for everybody's favorite segment. Are you ready, John?
Guess the game.
Let's do it. Here we go. This is number 25, by the way. That's pretty cool. Who can
be now? Hello, John, Van, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist here with Guess the Game number 25. Can you believe we've done 25 of these already? I can't. Anyways, this one is brought to you by Dr.
And some of them weren't even Mississippi State 2013.
I'm still going to guess that.
All right, here we go.
Crack 'em on Twitter. And don't worry, we're not going basketball. We're going right back to football. So, guys, let's give this a listen.
This time. Gives it to right guard. Inside the five, runs over a man. Touchdown, Auburn. Came up to make the hit and he just bowled him over. And with 9:50 showing on the clock in this opening period, our new score, Auburn 7-0.
Okay, gentlemen, what do you think about that? I will see you in the hint file.
I think I know.
All right. I think that was Ron Franklin.
That was absolutely Ron Franklin. Bless him and his golden vocal cords.
Which doesn't mean it was recent.
No.
And he talked about running over a defender into the end zone. I think that was the Ronnie Brown play against Tennessee.
Ah, 2004. Glorious. I was there. I was in Neyland Stadium with my parents. In that stadium, watching, I can't remember who it was. I think just me and my parents, watching them just take Tennessee to the cleaners. That was the one where Tuberville, before the game, and that's in We Believed, it'll be in our next book. Before the game, he said, they can be loud here, but they do get quiet when you get ahead. So we want to get them quiet immediately, and we did, and they were. I agree with you. Let's listen to the hint file, but I think we've got this one figured out pretty well. And that doesn't mean it was a bad one. It means that we found a couple of clues, which is what this is all about, just finding
And it was about a 10-yard run, and guess what he said, 9 yards or something like that. And you could hear the Auburn band, but it did not sound like a home game.
No, right. It would have been a lot louder. So, all right, let's do the hint file.
Welcome to the hint file. Let me get rid of those bleeps for you guys, and let's give it a listen.
Ronnie Brown, the lone setback this time. Gives it to Brown, right guard, inside the five, runs over a man, touchdown Auburn. Jason Allen came up to make the hit, and he just bowled him over. Checkerboard, and with 9:50 showing on the clock in this opening period, our new score, Auburn 7, Tennessee nothing.
Oh, I bet you've got it if you didn't have it before. So good luck, guys, and I'll see you in the answer file.
The only hesitation I had at all was I didn't remember that was our first score of the game. That seemed more like a coup de grace you drop on them in the third or the fourth quarter, but that
was
the first
tone setter.
Whoo! It set a little tone. All right, let's wrap this one up then here.
All right. Jonathan, fantastic. If you guys guessed that this was your beloved Auburn Tigers playing Tennessee in 2004, well, then you're correct. And once again, I'd like to thank Dr. Crackham for sending that one in. If you have a send-in for Guess the Game, you can send it to @YardSaleArtist, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's all @YardSaleArtist. And until next time, Van, John, War Eagle.
I take it that the segment really is popular because apparently Jared is getting inundated with suggestions. And that's good. Yeah, I can just keep going as long as he's willing to do it. Because as long as he wants to do it, I'll keep doing it.
I appreciate Jared doing that, and I appreciate the listeners coming up with good ideas. That was a fun one to go back to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's one less thing we have to do that still contributes to this being a good show. And it's because Jared works so hard, and our listeners give him good ideas, and he puts those cool things together. So it's just a team effort all the way around. I like it. I like it. I like it. Let's see. So I guess now all that remains is for me to go to London and slap this British guy awake.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
All right. What have we got in the old mailbag this week?
All right, we got some good ones. Are you ready?
Oh, goody. Yeah, let's do it.
First one comes from mailbag regular John Otsuki,
mm-hmm.
who says, John Van, I hope all is well, and the Twitter arguments haven't turned you off of football too much. He says, I have two questions about the world outside of the SEC.
Uh-oh, there is one?
Somewhere it's hazy, but
well, hey, Illinois beat Nebraska, so anything is possible.
Bert.
Oh man, anything is possible when Illinois wins and Nebraska loses.
Well, it says something about the Big Ten that he looks like a genius up there.
Yeah, so. It does.
All right, so here's his question. So number one, if you had to do a barbecue style show for the ACC, the Pac-10, and the Big Ten, what type of foods would you eat? This is a great question.
All right, I want you to repeat it so I can really kind of set my brain.
If you had to do a barbecue style show,
right,
for each conference separately, one for the ACC, one for the Pac-10, one for the Big Ten, what type of foods would you eat?
Oh, yeah, that is interesting. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind with the ACC is like crab cakes.
Yeah, we could do some kind of coastal cuisine. I like
that. Yeah, yeah. What about the Pac-12? California.
Some kind of California cuisine.
Yeah, I mean, it's kale and something is what I'm to understand from Saturday Night Live and all.
No, there's lots salads. Of good food out there.
Well, I know they have In-N-Out Burger, but I wasn't taken with it that much.
No,
it's just another burger
place. We could do something from, again, we could do something from Seattle, from Washington or Oregon too, but.
Yeah, I suppose it would have to involve coffee, even though I don't like coffee nor drink it ever.
No, again, I think there's great seafood on the West Coast also.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be some kind of, I think there's some great taco places in L.A.
Well,
we'll let for listener suggestions.
I'd like to hear suggestions on this. I will say this. The Big Ten is the one I know because I live in Big Ten country now.
You say you're a local.
It's got to be something beef, some kind of burger-related thing. With ranch dressing on the side. Okay, so some kind of burger, like a Culver's type, Red Robin type burger with ranch dressing on the side, cheese curds. Okay, you got to have your cheese curds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you finish that thing off, as if you can still move, you finish that off with some Ted Drew's frozen custard concrete. These are all these things I never... Oh, and you started out, the appetizer is toasted ravioli. See, these are all things I knew nothing about before I moved here, and now they're just part of my regular diet, man. Toasted ravioli, burger with cheese curds with some ranch, and frozen custard concrete.
I like it. I like that one.
Man, and we would do like two game predictions and be on the floor.
The angioplasty.
God. It's no kidding.
All right. And then he says, if you had to pick, this is still the first question here. And his second part is, if you had to pick one team in those conferences to root for, which ones would they be? So pick a team from the ACC to root for one if you're going to.
ACC.
I'm going to pick Virginia Tech, but go ahead.
I know you are, of course. That makes sense. Yeah, Virginia Tech probably, or maybe like Boston College, because they're far away and I don't hate them and they're kind of neat and they have a cool uniform, you know. I don't know. They never hurt anybody.
Pac-12, Pac-10.
What are they now? How many packs are they?
Pick a team.
Who cares? Honestly, the team I enjoy watching, the Pac-12, it's I want the Arizonas to be good because they look fun, but they never are. So I usually end up kind of wanting Oregon to have a good year because they're fun. But honestly, I've been wanting UCLA to do good with Chip Kelly. So I'm going to pick one. I'm going to say UCLA for now.
I'll say Arizona State.
Okay. I don't know. Cool.
Big Ten.
It's kind of neat seeing Indiana do well.
Yeah, I'm happy for them.
But I got to go for Illinois, though. They're orange and blue. They're my state I live in. They're, you know.
Like a bird.
They never win anything. Yeah, I'll go Illinois.
I had to be honest. I really like the Michigan uniforms.
Yeah.
And their fight song was our high school fight song, too.
Yeah.
So maybe I pick Michigan. All right. That was a good question, John. Thank you for that.
Cool. Yeah, a lot of good stuff there. That was really good.
All right. So next question comes from longtime listener Preston Settle.
Yep.
Who says, Van and John, I want the AE Wishbone to assign the Vegas odds on Auburn football's chances of producing both a 1,000-yard rusher and a 1,000-yard receiver in the 2021-22 football season.
We're 100% going to have a 1,000-yard rusher unless something catastrophically bad happened.
Yes, I agree.
That's
so what are the we have not had a 1,000-yard receiver in a while, and we don't have kind of that guy that we know is going to be the guy. So
100% rusher, 0% pass receiver.
Well, again, I think, but if you put them together, so you think we're going to have a 1,000-yard rusher. So really, we're putting, what's the percentage chance we have a 1,000-yard receiver? And I'm going to say 15%.
I think that's generous, but okay.
Okay, out of 10. You think it's less than that?
I think it's zero. We haven't gotten a 1,000-yard receiver in the years that we had 1,000-yard receivers on the roster that should have been 1,000 yards. So I don't see how we're going to do it. We figured this out one time. Who was the last time? We had Davis, right? That was our all-time. He didn't have a 1,000-yard in 17.
No, it's been a long time.
It's been such a long time, as Boston said. That's right. So
that's it. That was a good question, Preston, but that's probably not the answer you want. So.
I just don't see it happening. I'd rather have three or four 500-yard receivers, honestly, than 1,000-yard receiver anyway.
I agree with that. All right. Our next question is from friend of the program, Jared Arbor.
Yes.
Who says, listener question. He says, since I mostly only keep up with Auburn football, what other notable programs have first-year head coaches this year? And if you come up with a handful, I'd be interested in your rank and stack rankings based on who you think has the best opportunity for success. So other first-year head coaches this year.
Well, we know Gus is going to do well at Central Florida because he's got a good team in a weak conference. His hardest game is Cincinnati, and he's a good first-year coach. I mean, he's going to have I think he's going to do great this year.
Sarkisian is at Texas. But I'm just saying a first-year head coach.
Yeah.
There's no other SEC coaches that are first year, right?
South Carolina.
And right, okay. Shane Beamer, South Carolina.
They're not going to be great.
In the ACC change?
Isn't Missouri going to – is this his first or second year?
No, this is his second year.
Oh, okay.
Drinkwitz, right. He's second year.
I didn't keep up with them last year.
Trying to think.
Because a lot of them didn't get fired last year because of circumstances.
Bert Bielema, new coach at Illinois.
Illinois, that'll be fun. Looking forward to watching that some more. But there's a bunch of them that, like, at any moment is going to get fired. Like the USC guy is hanging on life support.
Yeah. I was going to say there's a bunch that are just kind of hanging on, but those are the main new ones. And so out of, like, Gus, Sarkisian, Shane Beamer, Burt and Brian Harsin, how would you rank them for success in year one?
Well, if you by success you mean how many games they're going to win, I think Gus is going to win the most of all of that. I think he's going to go like 10-2.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah, but it's early days down there.
And it depends on how, you know, if their quarterbacks, who their quarterbacks are. So
right.
I mean, at Sarkisian, I think they have talent. They'll be a little bit better, but I don't think they're going to be any. I think Day and Auburn will be about the same.
About so. Texas is going to be like 8-4 probably.
That's right. And Burt and Shane Beamer will both be bad. So
they will. Nebraska notwithstanding.
No, that was a. Listen, I'm just going to say this. Scott Frost came out today and said, well, we saw when they saw how they Illinois lined up, we had to throw away 60% of our game plan. And I was like,
really?
A, if that's your plan, and B, if you say that publicly, you are that is not smart.
Hey, Beavis. What? Let's go fishing.
It's been a long time since I've gotten to play that.
That's very accurate. All right, our next question comes from Johnny Dent, who says, how many games will Bowling Green lose this season? How many games will Scott Leffler coach before he is fired? And how bad will you feel when it's announced? The answer to the last one is not bad at all.
Not very, no.
He says, here's their schedule for convenience. So I'm going to read it, and you're going to say win or loss. Are you ready?
All right. Bowling Green, yes.
At Tennessee.
Loss.
South Alabama.
Loss.
Murray State.
Oh, the races. They're in Kentucky, I learned. I've been to their campus now.
They are.
I'll go Bowling Green there, but that's just because I don't know any better.
Right. At Minnesota.
Loss.
At Kent State.
Ooh, the Golden Flashes.
That's a loss.
Are they good? Is Kent State anything? I don't know.
They're okay.
All right.
Home Akron or Archon.
Ooh. They play Archon in the St. Clair County Collinsville Arena. No, they might win that.
Is that a nothing tie?
It could be, yeah.
At Northern Illinois.
Oh, Northern Illinois wins. Eastern Michigan wins.
Yeah, okay. The rest of these, so there's our losses. They're not good. And we won't feel bad for a microsecond when he's gone.
No.
All right. Now, a couple more. Next one from a friend of the program, Auburn Elvis.
Yes.
Who says, what reasonably positive events versus Akron would make you happy, and what reasonably possible events would make you unhappy? And he says, P.S., I'm going to go ahead and say tonight's guess the game was Auburn, Mississippi State of 2013. You're close.
Not a bad guess. Yeah. It's usually a safe bet. We've kind of talked about this a little bit, but I guess what would make me happy is the I think we feel like we can kind of take the defense and the special teams more or less for granted, so hopefully that'll be the case. What would really make me happy is the offense to look remotely like they know what they're doing and not just because they're playing an inept
outmanned, yes.
Yeah.
That we execute well, that we have a plan, and we go out there and execute it, and it looks like something different, too. That would make me happy.
And we don't throw a bubble screen on the first offensive play that bounces off the receiver's face.
I just want something different in there, right? And what reasonably possible events would make me unhappy? Bo Nix running for his life and throwing the ball away on many occasions. An injury to a starting player would make me very unhappy.
Yes.
And I would say the offensive line having multiple penalties or missed assignments is a very reasonable possible outcome that I would be unhappy about. So.
Yes, I think that's absolutely good. Yes.
All right, and then our last question comes from a friend of the program, Jay Null, who says, okay, with practices mostly being first team against first team as compared to prior years, from a play calling standpoint, it will lead to faster starts on offense. Given coaches' experience with calling plays against true talent rather than creating offensive schemes based on success against second and third team. Hmm. What do you think about that?
I mean, it makes sense, but I don't know exactly what Gus did all the time vis-a-vis what they're doing now. So, but, I mean, it makes logical sense, I think.
It does make logical sense. Sometimes, again, the offense gets a raw deal, whether they're playing the first team or the second team or the third team. Sometimes in scrimmages and practice, the defense knows what's coming because it's the same team and they've seen it a lot. And sometimes we tell them to run the same play again and that kind of thing. So it's not always the offense's fault that things don't work perfectly. They're trying to set them up to make it harder sometimes. So I get it, but also I agree. Playing against the first team makes you work harder to get yards and execute and stuff. It doesn't give you a false feeling of confidence when you go out and play other teams, first team. So I appreciate that. Yeah. I think the Auburn defense is very, very good. I think we're going to be really excellent at defense this year. Yeah. So if the offense has success against them, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a positive sign for the offense because I think our defense is going to cause other teams real problems.
Sure. No, absolutely. Well, that was the last question?
That was.
We actually have something to talk about this week when we do the old trip.
I'm very excited about this part.
Yes.
Let's take a trip around the FTC.
And I say you.
Well, we have real tackle football.
It is a wonderful, wonderful weekend.
Wow. Wow. We have, oh gosh, I didn't even think about this.
I separated it into real games and cupcake games.
I'm just realizing that I'm going to be wading through a sea of Alabama and Miami fans. And could I just like not go now? I'm just going to go ahead and cancel the whole trip. Is that Saturday?
It
Alabama,
is.
Miami?
3:30 Saturday.
Oh, geez. Well, the good thing is security is going to be much higher this year. They're not going to let anybody in that's not got credentials and all that, you know. They're going to be checking people and everything. So maybe we won't get the usual wave of people come through. It's great when it's Auburn. Oh, man, when we have Auburn playing in those games, it's so awesome because some of them will come for the day. By the way, just as a public service on that, Dragon Con is not selling any Saturday-only passes this year because of COVID. They're trying to limit the number of people and usually get a lot of walk-up on Saturday. So if you're not coming for the whole weekend, you're not going to be able to come in. And I'm very excited about that because that means a lot of the football fan, Bama fan, looky-loos are not going to be able to come buy a one-day pass and then walk around like, what y'all doing here? You know, you're not going to get that. You're going to have to confine that to Hoover, Alabama, sir. Take your giant ring hat and go back to Hoover. All right? You can't do that here. Not allowed. Not allowed in. So.
All right. So how you feeling about Alabama against Miami in the opening game?
Well, I'd feel a lot better about it if I wasn't going to be in the middle of it and if I felt like Miami had a chance. But I've heard a lot of talk this week about how, you know, they're going to be, you know, it's funny. This is the team that used to have Patrick Nix as their offensive coordinator. Now they've got Rhett Lashley as their offensive coordinator. They're going to be running Gus's offense, more or less. And I think it was Andy Staples was making the point this week that when they went up against maybe Clemson, yeah, they said, we're not going to be able to run the ball. Let's just throw it every play. But that offense doesn't work when you can't run the ball. And so I just don't see Miami getting across the 50-yard line this game, honestly.
Yeah, and I think they'll cause some problems for Bryce Young, the young Alabama quarterback, but Alabama's going to win by 20 or whatever. So.
I think it's going to be 54-13.
Yeah, something like that.
Satan.
All right, and then the night game in Charlotte, Georgia-Clemson.
That's the same time as Auburn-Akron?
Yeah, it's a little later than Auburn-Akron.
Okay.
But yeah, pretty much.
Good, because I'd hate to have to pick between the two. Obviously, I'm going to watch Auburn-Akron, but that means I'm sitting there going, I would rather watch Auburn-Akron than Georgia-Clemson. If you're not an Auburn or Akron fan and you say that, somebody should just walk up and slap your face. It should be the law that you just get free shots at somebody that says that if they're not an Auburn or Akron fan. It's forgiven if you're one of us.
Say if you're not an Auburn fan.
Yeah, that's fair. If you're an Akron fan, go ahead and watch Georgia-Clemson. Just probably a safer investment in your time, honestly. Yeah, I'm looking forward to Georgia-Clemson. That should be really fun. That's quite the kickoff game for the season right there.
It's huge.
And I haven't got any clue who's going to win because, on the one hand, Georgia should have a little advantage over Clemson, but on the other hand, Georgia's Georgia, and they'll find a way to screw this up.
I think it's going to be a good game, but even I'm gonna say Georgia, mm-hmm. But in a very close game, like one or two pointer.
Yeah. I think Greg Staples had a funny line about this. The guy that was on with him said something like, if Georgia doesn't win the national championship this year, are their fans going to be like ultimately disappointed? And Staples is like, absolutely. If they don't win the national championship this year, they're going to consider this a failure of a year.
Well, and I think, again, that's an important point that we should all just continue to blow up and talk about all the time. Like, if Georgia's clear the favorite of the national title, if they don't win, it's a there's nowhere to go but national title or bust for them.
Or bust.
It's the only option.
It's the only option. That is exactly right. LSU-UCLA is going to be interesting because we saw UCLA really look like they knew what they were doing Saturday when they demolished Hawaii, but it was Hawaii. LSU, we still don't know anything. So this, to me, this is a fun game. Georgia-Clemson is just like two rhinoceroses knocking heads. Alabama-Miami is like a rhinoceros and a flamingo knocking heads, or an ibis, I guess. But LSU-UCLA is like the mystery team against the possibly really overrated team, and I just don't know what to think there. It's going to be fun.
I'm excited. UCLA, it looks like they can run the ball. Right?
Yeah.
However, we know one thing from LSU, and that is that they are fast and talented on defense, and running side to side against them is not a recipe for success. So I think that may be a problem for UCLA.
Yeah. I want them to be good, though, because I like Kelly.
I do.
But I like him as a coach. You know what I mean?
That conference is better when UCLA is competitive. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I want to see that offense continue to do something.
And it'd be really funny if LSU went out there and really laid an egg, too. So.
Oh, that would be so great. I would love it. Just like the Mississippi State game last year. How great was that, watching them just fall on their faces and look like idiots against Mississippi State? It was so good. Louisville-Ole Miss on Monday. So while I actually have a game to turn on when I get home from the airport on Monday, that's always exciting. Although nothing will ever match coming home from Dragon Con on Monday night in 2002 and being able to turn on Monday Night Football, and it was Auburn at Southern Cal in the Coliseum. That was, if only we'd won, it would have been perfect. But Louisville Ole Miss should be a lot of fun if Louisville can put up any kind of fight. You don't think they can?
I think they'll be entertaining for a quarter or two, and then Ole Miss runs away and leaves them.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm curious, though, just to see what Ole Miss has got, because they've gotten a lot of talk.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of talk. And sometimes that's too much talk. You got to back it up. A lot of hype. Mm-hmm. Got to back it up. I'm kind of hungry for dessert. What we got for cupcakes?
Bowling Green and the Fighting Scott Leffers at Tennessee on Thursday night.
John, I don't rewrite Shakespeare for just any coach. They have to be special.
That's some of your finest work right there.
I tell you, I think so.
You can search that on the War Eagle Reader if you want to find
it. It is, yeah. I actually read that at Dragon Con a couple of years ago just because people were talking about it. I'm like, I read that. Take 10 minutes. Sure, I did, or 5 minutes. So Bowling Green, Tennessee on Thursday. Yeah. Ooh, so that's coming up pretty quick.
It is. And
that's
then,
the same night as Central Florida.
It's Boise.
Boise, which I'm looking forward to if we can get to the bed and the Airbnb fast enough.
And then Saturday we got the Fighting Terry Bowdens at Louisiana Monroe at Kentucky.
Mm. That ain't gonna be pretty.
No. Rice at Arkansas, Louisiana Tech at Mississippi State, Michigan, Missouri, Eastern Illinois at South Carolina, Florida Atlantic at Florida.
Oh, interesting. Okay. I miss the days where Florida comes out in the first game of their season and struggles against somebody like that. Remember those days a few years ago?
Yeah.
That was fun.
Kent State, Texas A&M.
That ain't going to happen.
And then Etsy at Vanderbilt. People really appreciated your Etsy thing for East Tennessee State.
What?
Last week we were talking about Vanderbilt's schedule, and their non-conference opponent is East Tennessee State, and
he called
them Etsy.
I was saying, did somebody write in or somebody complain about that?
No, people loved it. We got a lot of good feedback about Etsy University.
Oh, good. I haven't seen any of it. I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, this is going to be a game where one side's throwing encyclopedias and the other side's selling personalized homemade items on the internet. So it's really cool. I mean, you know, I don't have any idea who's going to win there.
Vanderbilt wins by 20 and picks up a couple of, you know,
home furnishings. Yeah, a couple of doilies, monogram doilies for the coach. That's nice. I actually ordered something from Etsy this week. I ordered a Tony Stark mask, like, you know, like COVID mask, so I can wear my Black Sabbath t-shirt, blue jeans, and the Tony Stark mask and be Tony Stark in the Avengers. Yeah, I'm looking forward. Nice. That's my Archon costume. So, yeah, so Etsy and Vanderbilt, that's cool. Oh, and we also got Penn State, Wisconsin, which is a good, not only an interesting matchup, but also a good scouting opportunity.
That's right. That's why I put it on here, because this is in the early window Saturday. There's not a lot of great games, and this is probably the best one. And it's a great chance to watch Penn State and see what they have. So I will definitely be watching that in the early time period on Saturday.
That sounds good. Sounds good. All right. I think we've got something interesting on a couple of games interesting on Thursday. We've got some hype that teams have to live up to or not coming up this weekend. And, of course, we've got the first look at what the new look Auburn Tigers might somewhat look like. And a lot of interest. And then a game on Monday night. So if they could just...
There's a Sunday night game, too, if you're really desperate for it. It is Notre Dame, Florida State.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes.
Well, I'll be busy Sunday night, obviously. But Monday night will work. So that's cool. Yeah, Notre Dame, Florida State. I remember the days when that was a competitive game, but I have a suspicion that that's going to be butt-kicking. I tell you, we live in a world where Florida State's no good, USC is not very good, but yet, I was going to say somebody. Clemson. And yet we still live in a world where Clemson is actually a power consistently year to year, and I don't like that world. That world needs to change. I feel like that scene in Community where they went down the dark universe, you know, the darkest timeline, and it ended up being Clemson and Alabama being really good all the time. We need to get out of this timeline, John.
I like it.
Ah, Lord. All right. Again, one more quick word. We will not have a full episode on Monday, but do not despair. We're going to touch base and have a quick kind of recap analysis of the game just briefly. And then we'll be back later in the week for a regular show. So, any final thoughts?
Stay tuned for part two of the Acura preview episode, where we go deep on the special teams matchup.
Archon forever, John. Archon forever. Our time is more than up. We thank you for yours. Warrior, John.
Warrior, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @auwishbone and at facebook.com/auwishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.